Hey listeners, welcome back to Crime Life. I'm your host, Heather. It's been a while and I can't wait to get started on today's episode, but before I do, I want to update you on the podcast. I know it's been a couple of weeks since we put out an episode. We were fixing any tweaks that we had and syncing our schedules, and we both decided it will be just me doing it solo from now on. Nothing has changed in our friendship and no hard feelings has come from this decision between both of us. Tasha and I both wanted to do a podcast for years, and if it wasn't for her, I don't think I would have started Crime Life in the beginning. I hope with that being said, you still come back each week for a new episode and continue to give me your feedback and rate our show. This episode is on the murder of Darlene Priariello. She went by Dolly. She was 16 years old from Mississauga, Ontario. She was a bit of a tomboy with brown eyes and long dark hair. On the night of May 6, 1982, Darlene had gone to her boyfriend's house to watch a movie. After the movie, she had to get home for her 11 o'clock curfew, which she will never make. She walked to a close by bus stop, and while waiting, a man in a car pulled up and asked if she wanted a ride. His name was David Dobson. He was 6'2", with a full beard, definitely did not look like your normal 17-year-old. David wasn't a complete stranger to Dolly. She had seen him around because he'd worked at the local factory as a shipping clerk, but they'd never really engaged in a conversation. David was saving to get a new car, thinking that would help him with, you know, getting girls. He had only had this new car for 2 weeks when he was driving around and saw Dolly at the bus stop. So he thinks, this has to be a sign, this is perfect. He got out of his car, opened his back door, and was able to persuade her into accepting a ride home. He headed the way, Dolly said, towards her home. But soon he made a wrong turn. And when Darlene said something, he decided to run a few lights and stop signs so Dolly couldn't jump out when he would stop and didn't want her to run away. David pulls into the parking lot of the 600 group, which was a factory at the time, put the car in park, lunged at Darlene, and began to sodomize, torture, choke, rape, and bludgeon her to death. He began to grab her breast and demand her to take her pants off. He asked her if she was a virgin, and she said no. He smiled and started to have sex with her, bites her on her breast, and she said, I don't want to get pregnant. David then says, I'm just here for the sex. And he ejaculates in her anyway and said that's it. Dolly then asks if she could sit in the front seat, and David said sure, but then he grabs her belt loop on her jeans so she can't run away. He tells her, hey, I got a present for you. He reaches in the window of her car and grabs a cement brick. He then hits Dolly in the left eye as she yells, oh no! David continues to hit Dolly with the brick 2 more times, when she then falls. And David sees a bigger brick and begins to pound it in her head over 7 times. David grabs Dolly by her feet and drags her into the field next to this factory. After dragging her for a while, he notices her clothes are pulled up past her shoulders from being dragged. He then finds a safety pin and pierces it through Dolly's left breast nipple. He notices her necklace shining from the reflection of the moon, and he takes it off and puts it in his pocket and grabs a lighter that fell out of Dolly's pocket also, and then starts burning her right breast. He then finds a wooden board with nails in them and lays it on her chest and hits it several times. He then stands up and urinates on her before he leaves the scene. How disgusting can you be? I believe in the beginning of the story, you would see this type of crime as an organized crime. However, the acts that David does afterwards would totally be described as a classic lust murder by a disorganized offender. David left Dolly's body out for anybody to find. He left her naked, her legs spread open, a bloody brick just smashed into her face to where she was unrecognizable. The next day, David got up at 6 a.m. and went to work like any other day. On his way to work at 7:30 a.m., he drove by the scene and saw her body was still there. After he got to work, he looked up the name of that factory. David began to call the factory and tell the secretary there was a dead body out back and looked like she had been murdered, and his name was Fred Baker. He would continue to call back a little later and asked if the police had come yet. He then calls a third time, and a man answers. So what does David do? Hangs up. He waited a few minutes and called back, and this time when the phone was answered, David says, "The future's uncertain, the end is always near, and you're gonna die too," and hangs up. David is now getting frustrated, decides to call again, but this time he calls in a bomb threat. He wanted to pretty much get noticed, guys. Her body was then found as they evacuated the factory. The person that found her couldn't help but throw up because the condition she was left in and just the fact that she was a kid, he couldn't handle it. David then calls up to the Mississauga News and said the girl's name was Darlene, she's 17 to 19, and his name is Fred Baker. What's weird is he wants the attention, but he's giving a fake name. At lunchtime, David decides to walk down the road to the 600 group and ask a reporter, "Hey, what's going on?" And the reporter said, "There's been a murder, but I don't have much information." David then walks back to work. David started taunting the police with a 4-page letter, which I will read here soon later in this episode. But it's very graphic and disturbing, so if you can't handle things like that, you might as well skip over it. But then again, you are here listening to a crime podcast, so what do you expect? To me, there's no such thing as a PG crime. David called Dolly's school to get info on her funeral, even calling the cemetery to find out where her plot was. The same letter that David wrote to taunt the police was sent to a library with Dolly's necklace and the lighter that fell out of her pocket. He definitely was looking for attention. This doesn't seem like a crime that he was ashamed of or had any remorse for. I mean, what do you think? Let's get back to the crime scene. Now, Dolly was positioned with her legs open, pants pulled down to her ankle, her sweater and bra were pulled up with her breast exposed. The brick that was on her head was 66 pounds. She had bite marks, burn marks on both her breast and her pubic area. The safety pin that was pierced into her left nipple, the detectives were able to get a palm print from the skin of Dolly's inner thigh, but at that time, they had no one to match it to. Days later, David Dobson was identified as a suspect because of the police being able to trace that call to a factory a block away. David got cocky and kept calling that factory and the news station, and this eventually got him caught. The owner of the factory where David worked was able to listen to an audio recording and identify David's voice. The next day, a fellow coworker found a paper on David's desk with the numbers of the factory where Dolly's body was found and the Mississauga News. David then wrote a letter to the Peel Police stating, "I won't strike again until next year at the same time. Set your bait and try and catch me." David was arrested later on May 12, 1982. And upon David's arrest, the police found the newspaper clippings of the murder in his wallet. He provided the officers with a complete verbal and written statement of this murder. He also gave a writing sample, a dental impression, audio recording, and a semen sample, which all match evidence that was found at the crime scene. The smaller bloody brick he used to hit Dolly first when he hit her in the left eye was in his front passenger seat floor. Does this sound like someone who wanted to hide his crime or even felt any kind of guilt for his horrific behavior? Let's take a break here and get a few words from our sponsor. Remember that 4-page letter I told you David wrote to taunt the police with? I have it in front of me. I'm going to read it the best I can, even though the writing's not the best. And there's a bit of scribbles all over the place. But I'll do my best. He says, "Read this thoroughly and keep it for your records. David Dobson wrote this on April 7th, 1982. Attention, Inspector Jim Wingate. This letter is in regards to the death of Darlene, age 16. This is a detailed description of what happened the night of her death, May 6, 1982, at 11:20 p.m. At 11:05, I picked her up hitchhiking on Dixie Road on the overpass at the Q, south side, headed north. I asked her where she was going. She said Dixie and Bloor. I said that I was going that way. So she hopped in the back seat. She felt secure. I drove her up to the townhouse and said that I was going to turn around. I did, but then I kept on going. Right through that stop sign, I turned right. Went through the first light, turned left. She said that that is fine, but I could just let her out there. But I ignored her, and I kept going. I drove through every light and stop sign so that she wouldn't jump out. If I stopped, and then I just kept driving around the factories for approximately 10 minutes. When I pulled into the 600 group where I parked by the wood pile, I rolled up the windows, looked at her, and lunged at her in the back seat. She screamed, and I kept saying, shh, quiet, quiet. I then told her that all I was after was sex. All of this while she had to be quiet, except she asked me if I had a smoke. I said I don't smoke. She said okay. I then slid my hand up her shirt, under her bra. She gasped and I smiled, so I lifted the shirt and began sucking her tit. Then I told her to pull her pants down. She did. I pulled mine, spread her legs, and asked if she was a virgin, and she said no. So I then said to find the hole. She did, first shot. She also said she didn't want to get pregnant. I kept this in mind. I then ejaculated in her vagina. She moaned and climaxed. Then we both pulled our jeans up, and she asked to sit in the front seat. I said okay, but I held on to her while she got out to ensure she couldn't run. I then took her to the other side of the car where I told her I had a present. I reached through the window under the seat and produced a small brick. She shouted, "Oh no," terrified, and I said that she wouldn't get pregnant this way. I then hit her in the head with it and she didn't fall to the ground, so I pushed her to the ground. Covered her mouth while she screamed. I kept saying, shh, shh. She quieted and said not to strangle her. So I then picked up a brick and proceeded on hitting her head. It was making a knocking noise. I then dropped it on her face. She then started choking on blood. So I picked up a 1x6x5 piece of wood. I put it on her chest to strangle her. I held it there for approximately 2 minutes. When released, air was sucked in and she started quivering. So I bashed her head a couple more times and dragged her over. If you guys had your tent where I picked up the brick, then you found on top of her, there she was. So I bashed her head a couple of more times and dragged her over to where you guys had your tent, where I picked up the brick that you found on top of her head. There she was also quivering. I found another piece of 1x6x12 with a nail in it. I punctured her heart, her lung area, approximately 5 times on top, a 2 to 3 times on the side, 1 time to the back of the neck, where you guys probably found it. I dropped the brick on her stomach to break her ribs. I then disrobed her, pulled her pants down, and that's where I went from ripping her panties off her body and ate her out. By that time, it was already 11:20. I found a lighter that had dropped out of her jacket. I picked it up. And this is where it gets a little blurry. It looks like the words were kind of rubbed. So it says, I picked it up, singed her hair, pushed up on her, and burned her nipple. The left one. I found a safety pin and put the safety pin through her right nipple. The safety pin also fell out of her pocket. This is my first crime. Pretty serious. Hey, if you charge any of your suspects, you're wrong, because I know I did it, and nothing can change that. At 10:15 a.m. Friday, I called the 600 group and said that there was a dead girl named Darlene out back and that she was to call the proper authorities. I called the newspapers. I doubt you'll find me. I don't even have a record. Tell Dr. John that he forgot the nail punctures to the chest. I was also talking to the detective and the Mississauga News. The bus stop at the bridge, the lighter I described, I will strike again. But not until next year. I won't strike again until next year at the same time. Any female hitchhiking, set your bait and try to catch me. I won't forget to be out on the streets because it will be mine and hers anniversary of her death. Do you know I have been seen by Peel's finest police and I have talked to them to see if they would catch me. But I walked away laughing. Sounds like he's pretty confident. Along the margins of the four-page letter, he also writes, she would have made it, but she was a hitchhiker and now a statistic. I'll be in touch until you find me. Return her necklace to her mother. Don't keep it or sell it. I will keep all the newspaper clippings until I personally die. There's a whole lot more. I just can't read them because the page is just, he scribbles a lot. But I just don't understand why he would claim in 2007 that he was sorry and is changing and all this stuff. And it was just because he was abusing drugs and stuff. But your taunting letters sound nothing of remorse. You clearly would do it again. Just like you said, you would strike again next year on that anniversary. So you wanted to get caught. The medical examiner said that Dolly lived through her attack and felt everything, suffering a slow, agonizing death. They believe she died 20 minutes after being bludgeoned by a 66-pound brick. David tried to blame his behavior on drug and alcohol abuse. Then he said it was because he was depressed from his dysfunctional childhood, or it was because he was recently rejected by his girlfriend, and he related Dolly to her in a way that he just went on some kind of lust rage. On April 11th, 1982, David was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. Darlene's family was able to give an impact statement at David's sentencing, but they had to give it to him 30 days before the actual sentencing so that he could proofread it. David read it, and the court said that they could not use the words of calling him a monster or a product of the devil. I think that's so stupid. Darlene's family were fumed. I mean, where was Darlene's respect while he was killing her or urinating on her? But here the court wants to say they can't call him a monster or a product of the devil because it hurts his feelings or he doesn't want it. That's absolutely ridiculous. Why should he even be able to proofread or even decide what people could say or couldn't say about him or how this murder impacted them or how they felt about David? It makes no sense to me. Later in 1998, during a David Dobson interview, he stated that he found prison to be comfortable. He didn't mind it at all. He actually liked it in there. He even would write letters to the higher command to stay in the same cell with another murderer who he had had an ongoing relationship with and I guess was in love with. In 2007, David went up for the parole but was denied. After 25 years, he is eligible to go for a parole every 2 years, but Dolly's family continues to get signatures, doing whatever they can to keep him in prison. They don't believe him when he says he's sorry, even when he fakes his tears. And since 2007, he has been denied every time he has gone up for parole. He is currently staying at Bath Institute, which is a medium security prison in Bath, Ontario, which is west of Kingston, Canada. Hopefully he dies in prison because he doesn't even deserve life outside, because I'm sure he would strike again. Once an offender, always an offender. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you have an episode suggestion, please visit Crime Life's website at crimelifepodcast.com, or you can directly email me at crimelifepodcast@gmail.com. You can also like my fan page on Facebook at facebook.com/crimelifepodcast. Leave your feedback. I'd love to hear what you think. Until next time, stay obsessed with the crime life.